Spotify seems to be surviving a head-on battle with Apple. The world's largest music streaming service on Wednesday posted a surprise profit. Spotify in the black by just over $100 million in the fourth quarter. Spotify hit $96 million for the period. That's around double the number of nearest rival Apple Music.
Japan's SoftBank Group reported a 60% rise in quarterly operating profit in Q3, prompting a $5.5 billion share buyback.
A German government-appointed group has proposed that Germany stop burning coal to make electricity by the year 2038 at the latest. The proposal is part of the nation's efforts to slow a general warming in Earth's atmosphere.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's February 7th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in again today for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Lots to cover this morning on the program. It's Thought Leader Thursday, and in a minute, we'll bring in Chuck Garcia, our first guest this morning. He's our thought leader from Associated Bank. We'll talk about some new technology in banking and whether or not banks might tighten lending this year. Chuck, in just a couple of minutes here, and then a little bit later on the program, the co-founders of Improv Talk. And improv training actually helped lead to business success. There are some signs that it does and that it is working, and we're going to hear about it firsthand this morning at about 5:40 here on The Opening Bell. We'll also cover the latest news, weather, and sports through the hour. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street later this morning, with Dow futures off 107 points this morning, nearly a half a percent. S&P futures are off nearly a half a percent as well. Same story over at the NASDAQ as well, heading to 8:30 Chicago time and The Opening Bell. In Europe this morning, markets are also in the red. In London, off a fraction. In Germany, off nearly a percent. And in France, off nearly a half a percent. In Asia, still a holiday there for the Lunar New Year. The Hong Kong Stock Exchange and the Shanghai Stock Exchange are closed today. The Nikkei is going to end the day down about a half a percent, down about 122 points. And oil in the U.S. is trading at 56. Make that 53.68 a barrel, which is down about 33 cents. A couple of stories before we get going this morning. The Trump administration plans to roll back Obama-era restrictions on payday lenders. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is proposing plans to roll back restrictions on payday and vehicle title loans. The Bureau is proposing rescinding the rule that required lenders who provide payday, vehicle title, and certain high-cost installment loans to make an effort to find out whether borrowers could afford to pay back the loan. The agency believes rescinding the rule and not requiring lenders to underwrite their loans would increase consumers' access to credit. Critics of payday loans consider them to be predatory, taking advantage of the most financially vulnerable Americans. We heard yesterday from the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. Powell says he has used his first year as chairman to make sure the central bank deserves the trust of the American people, especially at a time when people are losing faith in institutions. Powell acknowledged that at the moment we are paddling against the current, we referring to the Federal Reserve, in an effort to restore the public's faith. He says to achieve the goal, he has tried to emphasize outreach to members of Congress, which oversees the central bank. He's also making his speeches and other Fed communications as jargon-free as possible. Powell's comments came at a teacher town hall meeting yesterday that was webcast across the country as a way to boost economics education. The EU Commission has slashed the forecast for Eurozone economic growth this morning to 1.3% from 1.9%. And Apple is once again the most valuable public company on earth. Apple passed rival tech heavyweights Microsoft and Amazon yesterday with a market capitalization of $821 billion. It's Thought Leader Thursday here on The Opening Bell, and we're happy to have Chuck Garcia in the house with us today. Chuck is an executive vice president, and he's also in charge of commercial lending at Associated Bank. In our Thought Leader today, Thought Leader seat today, also in charge of treasury management there as well. And Chuck is with us here in the studio this morning. Chuck, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Glad to be here. Happy New Year.
Same to you. I want to talk about a couple of things this morning, technology and commercial banking, but also a new headline that's out just today about whether or not credit standards are going to tighten this year. Investors have had mixed reactions to this over the last week. Is the banking industry in for a tightening of credit this year?
You know, honestly, I think if you were to look back probably 6 months ago even, you would see a little bit of a different view. Everybody knows a recession will happen someday. Yeah. Now, when is it? It's anybody's guess. I think there were feelings even in the early part of this year that that was looming and right on the cusp. So I think banks took a little, have been taking over the last 6 months even a different view on credit and maybe tightening up covenants, so on and so forth. And it's also forced some companies to look at alternatives for than traditional bank credit. So, but yeah, I think that really happened even back into 18.
It feels like too over the last couple of weeks there's been a mood shift. Now that the Federal Reserve has said they're not going to move forward with rate hikes this year,
very
much
so.
Have you noticed that as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it depends on which side of the fence you're on.
Yeah.
Okay, so we as a bank that we happen to be more asset sensitive, we would love more increases because those will reprice faster than our deposits. Whereas a borrower says, "Wow, okay, I'm more apt to borrow now," believing that we're going to stay stable for the foreseeable future. So it depends on which side of the fence you're on there.
Do you think it was a smart move by the Federal Reserve?
I do. I think if, you know, as I recall our last conversation in late 18, you know, they were planning, you know, I think the idea was four increases. And I said, you know, I'd see two probably. I think it's a wise move. I think the way the job market is, the international uncertainty, I think Brexit is a big factor in a lot of things. So there are a lot of multiples that go into this factors that I think it is a wise decision to slow a bit.
We recently had the State of the Union address, and we've kind of been gauging how CEOs are feeling now about the economy. And everybody seems still positive moving forward. You hearing anything different?
Again, I think it's a little more cautious, but overall positive, yes.
Mm-hmm. Before, we've had conversations on the Thought Leader program about how banks like Associated want to get better at technology, and you've talked to us too about how that would be acquiring somebody who's doing technology. But there's a report now that women, especially technologists, are finding jobs in commercial banking for this very reason.
I think that's such a great lead-in. It's evident everywhere in our organization, and I think across the industry. When I go to trade shows now that highlight a lot of the technology firms and banks that have technology arms and so forth, I will tell you where it was heavily dominated by males, say 10, 15 years ago, it's 50% plus women. It's great to see. I think it's just fantastic.
So when technologists come in, do they have to necessarily have banking experience, or is it like on-the-job training?
It's helpful to have that, but the technology, if you ask the right questions of what people want to achieve, and when I think of our vendors that we have good relationships with, they ask us what we're trying to achieve. What's the end game? What's the outcome? They build the technology around that. So you don't necessarily have to have that. It certainly is a benefit, I believe, but it's not an absolute have to.
And what are some of the things that these technologists would be working on?
Well, lending platforms, CRM, commercial relationship management types of things. You know, Salesforce is big in the banking business, but there are alternatives. I think of some of the things we're looking at of implementing products, implementing lending, workflow management, things like that are very significant to us and I think really our competitors as well.
Chuck, hang on. We're going to continue with Chuck Garcia this morning from Associated Bank. Chuck is in our Thought Leader this morning. He's the Executive Vice President, Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. And we'll continue in just a moment.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with our thought leader. Chuck Garcia is here from Associated Bank. Chuck, I saw an article recently that I wanted to get your thoughts on that said 1.8 billion people around the planet don't have access to financial services. So they don't have access to, let's say, an app on their phone to do banking. They don't have access to a bank. Those numbers really surprised me a great deal. almost blew my mind.
It's pretty staggering. But you think of the developing countries and not having the infrastructure of banking systems that we have, that we're fortunate enough to have here and in Europe and so forth. You think of Africa, certain parts of Africa in particular. I think that's where it's very, very prevalent that they don't have access to any traditional banking arms.
From a standpoint of all of us together on the planet doing our thing, how significant is it that 31% of the planet doesn't have that kind of access?
Well, I think it depends. I think certain areas that I've seen a couple of stories recently. 60 Minutes did a great piece recently, and it happened to be in Africa, but a lot of it's done by barter. Okay, so you sell goats to get this, so the currency is the goat. Now, having access to different arms in big cities in the developing world, I think that's a really, really significant need versus some of the outlying areas where they manage to use other means of currency. But absolutely, that's a wide open arena for banks or fintechs. You pick whomever it is. Fintechs are probably in a better position to solve that than the traditional commercial bank.
Yeah, and some of those fintechs say that this is proof that that mobile banking is going to be the key to solving some of this problem.
I think that's very valid, very valid.
And so what does that mean? Giving people access to their banking services via mobile phone that they can access out in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, and how does this get solved in terms of where do you put your money to begin with to have $50, okay, where I can pay you $22 via my phone? That's the part I think that's going to get really tricky. And, for every good thing that's done here, there's always a downside to this risky of, okay, do I take your $50 and it's no longer there for you? Because it's really going to be a virtual type of currency is really what it's going to end up being, I believe.
Yeah, and you mentioned the goats part of this. So these are parts of the country where, parts of the world, where they're still using all kinds of different currencies, hard currencies. They're not in the digital space yet at
Very,
all.
Very absolutely correct.
But this also opens up for banks. This is a good market. This is opens up a lot of potential customers, doesn't it?
It does. Again, if you can do it in a virtual manner, have it safe and accessible, it's wide open to that universe.
Another story that's out there, and we've talked about this before, the management, financial management systems that are in place, we've talked about them sort of in the private sector, but the government now has launched its own. Tell us about this.
I haven't really heard a lot about it prior to reading that article. It's way past due, obviously. The rest of the commercialized world has used this for decades, so it's great to see the government jumping on board. I don't know a lot of the details off that mm-hmm. front, but it will be interesting to see if we can actually manage ourselves and manage where our money is going for projects and the like on an ongoing basis. It's amazing it hasn't been in place
right.
to date.
Give our listeners a sense of, without systems like this in place, what kind of manpower and money is eaten up doing some of these tasks?
Well, first, you don't even know where your money's going. So you don't know if you overspent, underspent. So you probably overspent. You probably have to hire far more people because you don't know where the project is at a point in time. You don't know if you're 20% done, 40%. So you just keep adding layers of people and cost on top of it. It's just, it's amazing that it hasn't been in place to date.
Yeah, the management, the budget and treasury management system is what it's called. The Department of Budget and Management actually had one of those examples in the Bureau of the Treasury where now they can keep track in real time on the projects that they're funding, whether it be a bridge or some other kind of project wherever in the country.
Which is very powerful. If we can actually take that information and do something with it and put it into real motion and manage, it's very powerful.
Somebody was recently talking about this, I think in the discussion of the border wall and whether or not some of that was happening, that they don't have any idea where some of this money that's already been allocated has even gone, whether it's being used, whether it's sitting in some account somewhere. That seems kind of, as a taxpayer, a little irresponsible, doesn't it?
It's very irresponsible. It makes you angry as a taxpayer.
Yeah.
We all want our dollars to be utilized in the proper fashion. I mean, you look around the city and potholes, okay? We all want potholes filled because we want our tax dollars used. So I think this has tremendous opportunity for all of us.
Chuck, how can people get a hold of you and have this conversation with you if they want?
Well, certainly call me at 312-544-4346, or you can always email at charles.garcia@associatedbank.com.
All right, Chuck, we'll see you again next time.
Always great to see you.
Chuck Garcia is Executive Vice President and Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. He's our thought leader today. Remember, you can hear past thought leader conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. You can also head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership for more of our thought leader conversations there and to learn more about our thought leaders. Again, we do Thought Leader Thursday, obviously every Thursday here on the opening bell. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the opening bell. You've heard about improv training for business. Maybe this comedy training can help improve your communication in the boardroom or at a big meeting and lead to success in business. We're going to hear it in action this morning and hear it from the founders of Improv Talk, who are with us this morning. Ellen Schnur and Jim Messier are with us this morning. Ellen and Jim, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Steve.
Jim, by the way, you've probably recognized Jim's name if you're listening and you're a baseball fan. You're a former Major League Baseball pitcher.
Yes.
Hall of Famer as well.
New York State Hall of Famer.
New York State.
We don't want to confuse it. The other one's a little bit loftier.
So how did you make it, and we'll get into all of what we're doing here, but how did you make the jump from baseball to improv training?
Well, Ellen made me take her workshops.
I did.
So I went in, I took the workshops, and when I came back, I realized everything I learned, I could relate back to my career.
Mm.
So we started talking, and we decided this is a great thing to do, very unique, and here we are today.
Ellen, tell us a little bit about Improv Talk, this notion that you can train people in business with the same training you use in improv to be better communicators.
Actually, what I do is called applied improvisation. I studied at Second City and I.O. and all the Chicago places, but I then started studying applied improvisation, where you actually, we don't teach people how to be improv performers or how to be funny. We go into businesses and companies and we teach them how the mindsets. Actually, we don't even teach them. We give them the experience of the mindsets that improvisers use to be successful collaborators and innovators and really powerful team players.
And so give us a sense of, like, what, I'm hearing conversations in my head while you're talking about what those could possibly be. But give us an example of what that might be like.
Well, we start with trust, because when you're on in an improv ensemble, you have a group of people on stage that are trusting each other, that they have each other's backs, because we're making it all up on stage right then and there. No scripts. So we teach people that you have to trust who you're working with. So we do some activities. We never call people out and say, come up on stage. We do activities in pairs and groups and get them learning that you have to have each other's backs. What does that look like? So we get them talking and talking about each other to other people, making each other look good. What does that look like in the business, in the workplace?
And also, it's, you know, we're trying to get rid of that individual mindset, making it all about the team.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know in sports, you know, no one remembers the all-star that's on the last place team. You know, so if you can put the team first and they're successful, then you're going to get the credit also.
Jim, what is that like in terms of knocking down the? I mean, we all come up in business with years of probably the wrong training where this is concerned. How do you get somebody to think differently about this sort of communication?
Well, first, I think you have to know if the team's better, you're going to be better. Mm-hmm. And you're going to move forward quicker. If you have that individual agenda and you're just thinking about where I can go, you're not going to really help out and you might not move any further. So improv, everything I've learned and seeing what can make improve a person on stage is really for business. You have to. An improviser cannot do well if they're not thinking about the team. If they're just thinking about what they need to do next, the scene's going to fail.
Ellen, how long does it take to condition somebody with this kind of training? To get them to, A, be able to do it, to be able to be in the moment listening to their partner, their team, making sure they have all the information and not just focusing on what they're going to say next.
We worked with this company called MNJ Technologies in Buffalo Grove, and Jim will tell you a little bit more about what they do, but that was our our ideal situation where we went in and we worked with the whole company. We broke them down into groups of 30 and all mixed up, from secretary to president, all mixed up. And we worked with them for 3 hours, each group, and we taught them trust, how to listen better, how to be a better team player, how to be more spontaneous, all of the different mindsets that and skills that improvisers do. So by the end of the 3 hours, they're all laughing together. You have communication then from the bottom up and the top down, because nowadays you have to have communication going up and down all around the company.
Right, and there's more engagement.
Yeah. Tell us more about that, Jim, about that specific example, that specific company.
Well, in 2017, we went into MNJ Technologies, right? They're in Buffalo Grove. They're a technology and managed service provider that helps mid-market companies with their IT needs. So we went in, and they said they had a 10% jump in revenue, and they're also communications and culture changed for the better.
As a result of the workshops we did. But before that, they were not. And this is so common when you're in companies, especially when there's a lot of change going on, is people stay behind their desks and they're not communicating. They're on their screens and on their phones. And you have to have face-to-face communication. You have to get up from your desk and have face-to-face conversations when it really counts. And so that's what we do, is we give people the ability to and the knowledge that I do need to do this. And they have fun together, and they start to make work a little bit more fun and learn how to listen to each other better.
And also, I think it's part of the reason it's so successful is because they're engaged. It's interactive. They're not sitting down and listening to somebody speak then looking at bullet points. So they're doing activities, and then we debrief them. They're involved in their own learning, and then I tell stories that help reinforce what the lesson is.
Is it getting harder to get people to communicate, to listen, to get off their screens, to be in their person to person, human to human? It seems like with all the technology we have, we might be going in the wrong direction.
Yes. One of the things that I always teach is that when you're listening, is that, you know, our brains can process so much faster than people talk. So our brains get bored and they start wandering. That's why it's so hard to listen. So you have to practice focusing on the person and what they're saying and not think about what you're going to say or what the email that you have to send out or how many likes you got on your post. You have to really focus on what the words that they're saying and then allow yourself to respond directly to what they've just said. When you do that, you develop much stronger connections, so much more trust.
And also, I think the technology now, it is going the other way. So at first, it helped communications because it opens up a larger area. But now people are using emails and texts, and there's follow-up questions, so they're actually taking longer to communicate because somebody's always going to question what's next, and you really need a face-to-face to be able to do that.
Well, and if you send an email and you misread the email, you can cause ruptures in relationships all the time, and people misunderstand. Whereas if I'm talking to you, I can read your body language and your facial expressions. And we work with people on that too. What kind of messages are you sending out with your body language and your facial expressions? So many people are just stone-faced most of the time. Oh, you did a great job, you know.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, thanks. I don't believe you.
Listen, I get this from both ends, because sometimes I send emails and people read too much into them. So there's that. And then also I have like the facial expressions. People know exactly what I'm feeling and thinking when I'm in a conversation, which I think can be bad and good, because they can tell immediately if I'm angry, if I've tuned out, if I'm not paying attention. So that can be kind of a double-edged sword, can't it?
I don't think so, because I think it's right out in front. If they know you're angry or whatever it is, you could work it out right there. But if it goes down the road, it probably causes more of a problem.
Well, and if you're a leader and you are communicating about your culture change or this new vision or new process that you have, and you're not watching whether or not people are understanding what and following what you're saying, sometimes, you know, just because words are coming out of our mouth does not mean that people are getting what we're saying. So you have to watch people's facial expressions, their body language. Are they getting it? If they're not, say something, you know?
So Ellen, give us, and we're running out of time, but I want to leave our listeners with something, maybe a first step forward in better communication this morning if they're at the office or perhaps getting ready to do a big talk or a big team thing. What's the first thing that you, first advice that you would give people to do it better?
The way improv changed me, studying improv changed me, was that I used to think I had to look good. I was always worried about whether or not people thought I was smart, whatever. I now realize it's about the other person. It's about the team. It's about when I focus outwards, I am not worried about whether or not I look good. And it makes people easier to, I'm easier to work with. I'm much more fun to work with that way. And it makes for a more successful team.
Jim, if you could have the ear of potential clients that might be listening this morning, the companies that you'd like to work with, what would you tell the boss about hiring you?
I think it has to do with what I said before. You really need your team engaged. And one of the reasons why it's important, too, because a lot of leaders, they're actually putting out fires instead of doing the job they want to do. So if you can create that communication, that teamwork, have each other's backs, their job is going to be a lot easier. Plus, when we come in, it's engaging. It's interactive. People remember it a lot longer because they were involved in their own learning. It's not sitting down, listening to somebody talk, get the bullet points, and then a couple days later, they totally forgot what they learned.
Is the process, when Improv Talk goes in and has clients, is this a long process? Is it a multi-event, a multi-appointment sort of situation? Or do you have one day where you're with everybody and the next day people are putting into action what you've taught them?
It's one day people are putting into action what we taught them. We like to do repeat. We have more different workshops that we do later, but one workshop will help change the culture as long as the leaders are involved and on board.
And the I can hear a boss saying, well, how will I be able to gauge success after going through this? How quickly will I see success? Are the result, is it results immediately?
I think you could just see it. If you're walking around your office, and you're seeing people more engaged and talking and communicating, it's going to work.
How can people get in touch with you? And if some of those clients, potential clients are out there listening, how can they hire you?
They can go to improvtalk.com and jimmasier.com.
Anything that I've missed?
That Jim's a great storyteller.
Right.
He tells great stories from the mound, and I'm not a baseball fan at all, which is really weird that we work together. But his stories really bring home the points that we teach with improv, so it's a really unique mix.
And that's why it works, too.
Well, it's again, it's wonderful that you guys were here this morning. Wonderful meeting you. All the best to everybody at Improv Talk. Come back and see us again.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate
Thank you.
Ellen Schnurr and Jim Messier with us this morning. Again, it's Improv Talk, and you can find them online at improvtalk.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street. Losses, I should say, a little bit later. Red on the screen everywhere. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures all off more than 0.5%. Now, agriculture and commodities, and here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look at yesterday's livestock futures trade at the Mercantile Exchange, lean hog futures fell to their lowest level since mid-August, declining for the second straight session. Weaker prices for pork pointing to abundant supplies. Some traders were betting on increased pork exports to China because of the African swine fever, but so far that hasn't really happened. And at the end of the day, the April lean hog contract was down 75 cents a hundredweight. February live cattle down 42 cents. March feeder cattle traded down 52 cents. And on the grain side at the Board of Trade yesterday, soybean futures edged higher as the government did confirm more soybean purchases by China. China reporting purchases of 586,000 tons of U.S. soybeans, plus another 182,000 tons to unknown destinations. That came in yesterday's report. And the March wheat contract ended the day down 3 cents a bushel, March corn down 0.75 cents, but March soybeans gained a penny a bushel, ending the day at 9.21¾. In response to several email requests, the information we have on the funeral arrangements for Harold Steele, who passed away the 1st of February, is that private services will be scheduled in the future for Harold Steele, former president of the Illinois Farm Bureau and active in many other organizations. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a great day.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, February 7th. Weekly jobless numbers lead off today's economic reports. Analysts expect to see 223,000 Americans file first-time unemployment benefits for the week, 30,000 fewer than the week before. Consumer credit for December will be out this afternoon. The forecast calls for $17.5 billion in credit outstanding, down from $22.1 billion in November. We'll also see the EIA natural gas report, and on the earnings calendar today, Dunkin', Fiat, Chrysler, Grubhub, Hanes Brands, Kellogg, Philip Morris, T-Mobile, Twitter, Tyson Foods, Yum Brands, Columbia Sportswear, Motorola Solutions, News Corp, and Western Union, all releasing earnings. So just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, February 7th. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.